The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.
Our time to turn our attention to no stranger to Freedom 106.5 FM this morning. As we say good morning and welcome yet again to us, a very lovely voice, a voice that, you know, we have grown accustomed to here on Freedom 106.5 FM. We speak with her from time to time. She joins us, very knowledgeable. Who am I speaking about? I'm speaking about the former Minister of Energy and Energy Industries. This is our guest, Ms. Carolyn Sipasad Bachan. We say good morning to you. How are you this morning?
Good morning to you and to all your listeners. Yes, I'm fine, thank you.
Well, you look fine. It's always good to chat with you, you know. I learn so much when I sit and chat with you every time we talk energy conversations here. This morning, no doubt, our eyes are on Parliament at 1:30. Everybody is waiting with bated breath to find out what the Minister Dave Tanku will present. We are hearing talks of a $61.7 billion budget. We don't know. There's talks in the background that the oil, gas prices at the pumps will be less. The Prime Minister is already, in some learned opinions, saying that excuses are being made where we can't please everybody, but she's not telling a lie. She's actually speaking the truth. So, Ms. Carolyn Sipasad Bachan, let's talk a little bit on the energy sector and this Dragon Gas deal and how it's going to affect our economy, our budget, because we haven't gotten the deal as yet. All we have is the license to negotiate. So please share some insight into this, please.
Well, just before we go into the specific issue that you're asking on, let me just comment on your earlier statement. And I quite agree with you that we have to be realistic and we have to be fiscally responsible and not, you know, all, you know, our expectations have to be a bit, you know, tempered, because we have to understand that we are in a situation and going forward, you know, running this deficit budgets every year is not going to help the country. At some point in time, what we are going to be doing is using our revenue to service, already I think we are doing that, to service the debt itself. I don't want to say that deficit financing is not an issue if it is used in the right way. If there is a deficit, it's like if you borrow a loan. Just imagine if you borrow a loan to finance a project, but that project is expected to bring in some revenue, then you know that you will be able to service that deficit, or that deficit will assist you down the road in a couple of years' time in cost savings. Then you know that you have a reduction in your expenditure. So the investment itself through, you know, what we call debt financing will be justified and it can be supported. So I just wanted to make that point. Coming on now to the specific issue you're referring to, the recently issued, or what I will say reissued, OFAC license, as we have seen that has been on and off for years. Starting with your point, yes, it is a three-tier license, the first phase being a 6 months, from what I understand, in the public domain, what is in the public domain. And it's really a six-month period to be able to negotiate because what happens is that you do have a 30-year exploration and production license. And I did make this comment last week, very right after the announcement, the public announcement, that this will have to be renegotiated. That contract has to be reopened. And if you look at the conditions, the stipulation from the very first press release that was issued by Marco Rubio, Secretary of State, it clearly stated that there has to be minimum returns and minimum benefits to the Maduro regime. So of course that requires, and I think that's the actual core of the exploration production agreement. Because in there, you would have tax concessions, you have royalty payments to be made. And it's clear that what they're saying is you have to minimize any payments to the Maduro government in terms of hard currency. And I'm talking about even US dollar type currency. You would recall that this was one of the conditions that was initially there in the first OFAC license that was granted for the Dragon Gas deal and Coquina Mannequin at some point. But, you know, recognizing that the deal would not have been a deal that they could go forward with in terms of the exploration and production license, the last administration sought a renegotiation of that OFAC license and from the Biden administration. And they were able to achieve a level of payments that they would have been able to make in hard currency. to the and that was in 2023 when it was modified to allow payments, because there's no way it would work that way. Now it's clear that this administration, in terms of the current U.S. administration, is clear that they want minimum returns. So, you know, last week I did make some recommendations, including that I think, of course, they're going to have to work out what sort of in-kind payments they would have to make on this for the expert in lieu of the royalty payments. Would there be an escrow account that would have to be set up and managed by international institutions? And that escrow account, of course, to be able to ensure that you match the sanctions and the requirements of the U.S. of the OFAC license itself. So in keeping with all of that, I think this is why they've given that 6-month window to allow for the negotiation, because these are the things that have to be negotiated, whether it's an in-kind type of service payment, to whether it's an escrow account. Thirdly, one of the requirements is that U.S. companies must be involved in the whole chain. So again, to how they're going to satisfy all those requirements will take some negotiations.
Now, another question to you, based on your learned info on this matter. Given the geopolitical landscape that exists between U.S., Venezuela, even with Trinidad and Tobago's current administration, how do we fear whether Maduro will negotiate with us, given the climate that was existing between the current administration since in opposition and then now, even when they got into office? We're seeing that tension building. We're seeing the words throwing from one side, which Trinidad and Tobago, to fear with this Dragon Gas deal. And finally, especially the fact that the U.S. made it very clear that the major, they are not to benefit heavily. So I'm giving you my stuff. You talk about escrow account and in kind, but I'm going to allow you to explore my natural reserves and hydrocarbons, and I don't benefit much. How are we to fare with this?
Well, the in kind that I was referring to was more for the people of Venezuela, citizens. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about the humanitarian type efforts that could be implemented. We have to understand something as well, that I understand all the of course we have to take into consideration the geopolitical risk. The OFAC license has never been a permanent license. We have to remember that as well. For investors like Shell and NGC, they would want to be comforted by some sort of guarantee, because they're facing now, they're at the stage of what we call final investment, the final investment phase. Mm-hmm. And when you're making that final investment, that's a huge sum of money to be putting out. And therefore, they must have some guarantees that there will, that the OFAC license is not just going to be withdrawn or revoked, again at a whim. So again, but I have learned one thing with countries, and when it comes to this, countries are not friends. Countries have interests. And this negotiation means that there are three parties to this negotiation. The Trinidad and Tobago is a country, Venezuela, and the United States. That's what makes it a little more complex, because you have to make sure that you're satisfying all interests of all three parties. That's Trinidad and Tobago, the U.S., and Venezuela. So how are you going to satisfy? And once you are able, this is a win-win. We have to get a win-win. But, we normally talk about a win-win for two parties. Mm-hmm. But now we have a win-win for all three parties.
Three.
Mm-hmm. So it's going to be, this is why I think they have allowed that 6-month window for this complex negotiation phase. And I think, it's important that we align those interests. So we're going to have to go to Venezuela, yes. The negotiating team, they're going to have to understand what is going, what the Maduro is going to be willing, the Maduro regime, to accommodate in terms of, in-kind payments. Even if there may be some leeway, I think there will have to be some leeway to allow for some payments in hard currency. Again, that will have to be negotiated with the United States to modify the OFAC license, if possible. So those are things that will have to come back as they are going along, as they try to finalize, because I get the impression for the Tier 2 part now, mm-hmm. which will be that part of the OFAC license, you're using the Tier 1, which is the negotiating phase, to be able to get the outcomes from Tier 1 to feed into the Tier 2, which will be the agreement itself. And this is why I think I had to say publicly last week to someone who had called me, I don't see how I think it was your Trinidad Guardian. I don't see the impact on this year's fiscal, but you know, the budget for this year, the fiscal year 2026, I don't see very much the impact, because at this point in time, if we're going to take until May to negotiate at least 6 months and then finalize those terms and conditions to feed into the tier two. I mean, Paul, you know, we could very well have a very successful negotiation and it takes less than 6 months and they're able to move to tier two. We don't know. But again, too, it depends on the negotiating team and how much they were able to achieve throughout the process. And again, too, to get the U.S. agreement, Washington's agreement on the various terms and conditions that they're getting for the modified, I would say, exploration production license. Because you're going to have to modify that.
One looks at the circumstances between the tensions and geopolitical climate between the U.S. and Venezuela. And one has to wonder, would they make it any easier for us to negotiate successfully with them? I mean, the terms and conditions for Tier 2 could be very stiff. Right now, they actually left it up to us. You figure it out. We give you permission. You figure out how you're going to get Maduro to adhere to these terms and conditions. And when it's done, let us know what you all trashed out. Let's see. Let's now review it. And this is in layman terms, as you just mentioned, to see if we could agree, and then we'll issue another license. So we're looking, in fact, at 24 to 36 months down the road before work can actually begin.
Well, I think it's a little, I think that in the process itself, as you're negotiating, you would be going back to Washington, you know, to say, well, is there any leeway here on this particular term or this particular condition? Because we can't make it, we can't make the, you know, the deal happen. But remember as well, that, I mean, this happened. Chevron was, the license for Chevron was also revoked. Mm-hmm. And then it was reinstated, you know, but with specific terms and conditions. And we must also remember as well that, you know, in this particular case, you know, we would be approaching it in the same way. You do have U.S. companies involved. So there's a benefit to the United States. There's an interest there that they want to satisfy. So you have whoever's negotiating, you have to look at all, you know, how you're going to get the blending of the interests of all three parties. And that's where I see the complex negotiation taking place.
Wonderful. Now, help explain, as we talk in energy, in the energy sector, what does the price of oil and the has to do with what we have, the pricing of on our fuel pump? There's a nice explanation in today's Guardian on page 6, where we got a little breakdown, where the past finance minister would said that he's pegging the pump prices against the U.S. Dollar per barrel of oil. Can you explain in layman's term how does that affect our prices at the fuel pumps in Trinidad and Tobago?
Well, that in fact affects what we call the subsidy or the surplus. Remember, we have control prices. I don't know if they're going to reduce the prices at the pump, right? Mm-hmm. But today, or increase the prices, we don't know. But either way, what happens is once you have a control, we have a control pricing, right? We are not deregulated. We are a regulated sector downstream. And so what happens there, you have a control price for your super, your diesel, and your unleaded gasoline, your premium. And what happens there is that so when you peg the price of the U.S. dollar, the U.S. price, they're predicting an oil price and they're pegging it. They're trying to estimate, in my view. I don't know what the explanation says there. I didn't get to read it, but they're trying to estimate probably the possible subsidy or the possible surplus that could take place over the year. And that is because once you look at the structure of the pricing for fuels in the what we call the domestic retail market, you're going to find that it's made up of various taxes. And the net back price at the pump itself, that price is probably either less than what we will be purchasing. And that US dollar price that you're pegging it on, the oil price, is also related to what we call an international price for refined products. So that price is linked, it's normally linked because there's a margin that has to be added on, like how we used to have a refinery margin that would have been added on for the production of, for the making of gasoline or diesel, etc. And you add that onto it, and that is how you're going to determine. So let's say, for example, I'm using a very simple example. Let's say that, you know, when you do the net back price and you take off all the taxes, the price at the pump is right now, I can't remember exactly when they take it off, where it is.
When they take off the taxes? When they take off the taxes, or what the price is now? Because currently it's $6.97 at Super, with premium coming in at $7.75 and diesel at $4.41 per liter.
All right, so we have to back out from there all the various, the dealer's margin, the what we call the wholesale margin, and when we back it out, you get a price.
Okay,
What you're talking about, that's the pump price. But you have to take off all those others, and then you get, let's assume that it comes back down to $6. I'll just use an example, because I don't have it off the top of my head, all the individual margins that would be added on. Let's say it came down to $6, right? Yeah. And you are saying that the U.S. price, based on when you add on the margin for refining, etc., comes down to $30, $6.50, or $7. Let's make the maths easier. Let's say $7, right? Then you're talking about a dollar subsidy for every, if you understand what I'm saying, there'll be a dollar subsidy that the government has to fund. If at any point in time during the year that price falls, and I say it becomes less than $6 and it becomes $5.50, then you end up with a surplus of 50 cents. Now, having said that, I have had a little problem with the way we have been dealing with this, pricing in recent years. And if you look at where oil prices were during, especially during COVID, you would note that the oil prices were very low. Refined, all the refined margins were very high, which is one of the issues I had with the shutdown of Petrotrend. With the oil price being so low, we would have had a very nice refining margin to work with. And that was predicted at the time that we were shutting down that refinery. Having said that, my problem is that the premium, for premium users, you have been generating a surplus to the government. And that has never, at all times you keep carrying up that price. But most times that is in the surplus area and not, is it, tends to be the diesel and the super that tends to be in the subsidy area.
So, I mean,
is that okay? Is that making sense?
That makes a lot of sense, because that is simply what the UNC opposition at the time was actually saying, that at the time when those prices dropped and you were in a surplus, you did not reflect it on the pumps. You left it stagnant, and the pressure was on. It kept being mounted onto the citizenry when you could have actually assisted and reduced those prices the same way you took it up. So they wondered, why did Colm Imbert? And then he went on to explain something on the international. I'm looking for it to tell you. And I had it in my mind isolated, but I forgot to just tick it off. But I'll get back to it in terms of why. Oh, I think he said here, it was stated that the then opposition UNC, noting the oil price had dropped below $80 a barrel, there was no change in the price at the pumps. Queried about the non-implementation of the reduced fuel prices, Imbert said then that government hadn't adjusted the price at the pump due to fluctuating global oil prices. So that is what led me to ask you the question, how does the oil price because persons are going to read this morning and not totally understand, because it seems as though some sort of dishonesty took place. Because if they're asking you, based on your explanation again, you are reiterating the point that, hey, we had an opportunity to reduce this the same way we took it up. Why? And then he gave an explanation, very haphazard. Fluctuating global oil prices.
Fluctuating prices meant that although it may have dropped under 80, it would have, remember, during the year, although we set the budget on a specific price for oil and natural gas, remember, it's cyclical. I mean, it's not steady at that point.
Right.
It's moving up and down. So he's saying that when it goes back up, it would have balanced off, because if you would have gone back into subsidy. So over the year, you would have ended up back at a 0 point. And if you looked at it, you would have seen. But my biggest problem with it is that we never see the surplus. And when they tell you about the subsidy, it's the subsidy alone. But during the year, you should tell us how much surplus you generated during the year and how much subsidy you had to pay out. Then we'll see what was the net figure to the government. We never really see that. And that is my problem. We never really get that particular information. Now, having said that, the premium users are the ones paying for the others, because diesel is very heavily subsidized. It's the price at the pump is very low. So that tends to be always in a subsidy position. Okay? Mm-hmm. The price at the pump being always lower than what international market price would be. Okay, so that is why they will always be on subsidy. So the surplus from the premium will help pay for the subsidy in diesel and the other fuels. So that's sometimes how it works, and I think, I don't know if that's what he was getting at.
I wonder the same, because prices in oil always fluctuating.
Correct.
You wake up this morning, it continues to waver. It's like the ocean, you know, the waves, it just keeps moving up, down. But, you know, it's never stagnant for too long, in my respected opinion. It's never stagnant for too long. So to use that as an excuse and say, well, listen, this is the reason why we're not doing something, I think it's a bit, no. I don't accept it, because as a government, I think your interest for the people is always to help them. Whether it goes up or down, I think he was trying to keep it at a high rate in the event that it does go up. But anyway, I have a guest, another guest story. A texter wanted to get in this morning. Let me just take this message very quickly.
Good morning, Davey and Mrs. Superside Bixen.
Good morning.
Your Pastor Tracy, I feel that we should be able to talk to anybody without a license. Talk, you know, just discuss, negotiate the whole deal. It is when you start spending money that maybe a license could come into effect, because now they could have some kind of impact on you. But to just talk. And secondly, I think this is an incentive, this license, this all this talk in the air about the possibility of a deal is really an incentive to Venezuelans who are against Maduro to overthrow him. Because once he's out of the way, you could get a deal. This man is objecting to a deal, you know, and you need to get him out of the way. That's just a message being sent to them. As it is, this 6 month, 8 month, 1 year, I wouldn't put a cent in that of anybody's money, not mine or any shareholder's money. Thank you.
I thank you. And, you know, when we look at it, I think the wider populace, Mrs. Carolyn C. Posad-Bajan, does not understand the reason why this OFAC license was necessary. When we understand where these international companies operate, the money is passing through the U.S. It's being traded in U.S. dollars. U.S. banks is where their companies are banked with in the United States. And this is where the money is passing through. So they have laws and stipulations and policies in place for companies that utilize their financial system. So this OFAC license, you had to get this license granted to you in order to negotiate. And no company that's dealing through the U.S. is willing to risk it for a country such as Trinidad and Tobago. Not that I say we bad, but no, it's not enough. I'm going to upset this entire conglomerate. I'm trading business across the globe to try to help Trinidad and Tobago, upset everything on this end, get banned. I could no longer do business with certain countries in the U.S. It did not seem prudent at the time.
Well, I think it's a little... So last year, I think we had this discussion, if you recall.
I did.
On one of these programs.
I told you I learned.
Yes, you sound a bit like what I said last year to you. Yes, it's because the reason why you need the OFAC license, the six-month negotiating period, is that they allow all parties to be part of the negotiations, including Shell and the NGC. If you don't... And they weren't guided, you know, under the, you know, and I think the negotiating period allows the U.S. to be part of the negotiating process itself as a third party and the U.S. companies. Now, you rightly said it. Remember last year what I was saying to you, around this time, I think it was budget time. The issue is that if these companies, you know, are sanctioned by the U.S. for negotiating with Venezuela, then you remember, this is what we have. It's not so much of a country sanction that is on Venezuela. It's more what we call it's a sectoral type of sanction. Venezuela suffers more from a sectoral type of sanction. They're different type of sanctions. And the sectoral type section is sanctions against the energy sector, the oil and gas sector.
Mm-hmm.
So if you are banned from working with the oil and gas sector, companies that are working there cannot negotiate and hold discussions. Otherwise, they will face sanctions. And when they face sanctions, it means, therefore, like their whole financial system. These are multinational conglomerates working throughout the world. And you remember, everything passes through all your correspondent banking and so on will be passed through. You will not be allowed. And therefore, your transactions will be blocked financially.
That's right.
So this will affect their entire international operation. And that is why in most of these companies, even now, I mean, if you look at the anti-money laundering laws and the counter-financing the terrorist financing issue. You will see, therefore, that you have to comply. So the Air Compliance Department is going to say, hey, no, you can't negotiate. You can't have talks if you are, because we're going to get banned. And in terms of our compliance program is going to suffer. And therefore, we will not be able to meet the requirements. And we will, our correspondent banking sector would. So once you have that, you have those sectoral, sectoral sanctions. You can't move forward. So
exactly.
This was the problem with the companies themselves. Not to mention as well Trinidad and Tobago. Trinidad and Tobago, you could start getting targeted sanctions against you as well. Either businesses, against sectors of the economy, it can rip, there's a ripple effect that can take place. So we have to be mindful of that.
And
unfortunately, it is what it is.
And to break it down in simple terms, monies would not be able to trade off. So these international companies wouldn't be able to get paid, because if they are banned from using the financial systems that they are accustomed to through the U.S. to their banks, and the U.S. ban it, where the money? They can't pay. Companies
exactly.
can't pay. You can't get your revenue, and it affects. Let's take a call quickly, respectfully. Good morning.
Hey, Dave, listen to you and your host.
Good morning.
I have a problem. My problem is at the pump here. When if you pay the fuel, whatever it's super whatever, you pay the fuel at the pump at $75, okay? It reaches $90. You make an interest as a government, right? A big amount of money you make. I didn't leave, man. Listen, and why can't we get a rebate? No, we will not be able to get a rebate, because people who already spend their money, all they have to do as a government, adjust it at the pump as soon as possible. Thanks.
I said it in my opening dialogue this morning that if there is a reduction based on, little leaked sources within the government, I think it should be done with immediate effect. I'm not expecting it. Just as much as it goes up, as Colm Imbert say it in Parliament, you look outside, you see the figures adjusting. As you look outside, you see the numbers rolling up. Right? I think the same should be done if this government sees it prudent enough to at least give us
the prices.
Yeah. Hello, good morning, quickly.
Morning, Davy, and morning, Mr. Prasad Bichan.
Good morning.
I thought that my rudimentary understanding of the hydrocarbon sector was sufficient, but I'm getting something this morning. I'm trying to clarify, Ms. Bichan. Davy, do you mind if I engage you for 1 second here?
Go ahead.
Did you say that the surplus from premium is assisting with subsidies for diesel? Premium gas, we are actually paying the pump price like everybody else pays all over the world, and it's not being subsidized from the taxpayer money in China. Is that what you're saying?
Yes. What happens is that there are times when the pump price...
Oh, yes. She's responding, so you can listen off here. Go ahead.
Yeah, the pump price sometimes tends to be higher than what the international market price would be for refined products. So you would find sometimes some people will tell you, they complain that they're paying a pump price here in Trinidad, but it was cheaper abroad. This was during mainly a lot during the COVID time.
Mm-hmm.
I think you would have seen where international prices and slightly after that. So sometimes during the year, it happens. If we had worked it out, I think during my time when we worked it out, we used to see it was a net zero. It tend to be almost on par with the international market price. Unless there are significant drops in the oil price, then you will see that the premium price was higher. So why I said it's subsidized, the surplus that would have been generated from premium will go towards helping pay for the subsidy that the government would have to put out for the people who are using diesel.
Indeed.
You understand that?
I think so.
The net off of it, but we don't ever see that figure. But it's an income coming into the government. It's a surplus.
Noted. Hello, good morning. Quickly, please.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, ma'am. You see, and you just outlined it. The reason for that surplus is because oil price went down to take or pay, even down to $1 a barrel. So therefore, the price of fuel will go down. But we had a company called Unipep here, went to the government at the time and said to them, here, what's going on? We are not making enough profit on our gasoline. That is the Gas Station Dealers Association, stating that their margin is very small. And they showed a proposal to the government that they want to import their fuel and sell their fuel. If the oil price goes up in the morning, gasoline in Trinidad goes up in the morning. If oil price goes down in the evening, gasoline would go down in the evening. And the government decided that they're not going down that road, Miss Carolyn Sipasad Bichat, because the gasoline distributors in Trinidad and Tobago would be a monopoly, especially one. One is the largest. And if it looks like he could supply gas throughout Trinidad and Tobago. And what will happen to the CARICOM, where we supply gasoline to the CARICOM, that is keeping, well, not petrol, not, I would say, Paria afloat to pay off the bill at PetroTrin, that PetroTrin incurred. Enjoy your morning, Davy.
Thank you very much, Ms. Sipasan.
I didn't quite understand.
I was a bit lost as well.
I didn't quite understand what it is, the point that he was trying to get at. But I think what he was talking about is when Unipet approached the government to be able to import their own supply. Bear in mind, I think he was also referring to National Petroleum, who is one of the biggest distributors, the wholesale distributor, like Unipet. Both are purchasing from Paria. And of course, Paria, because of economies of scale, it would be better that you'll be able to buy in bulk to be able to get your, you know, in terms of shipping and storage and all of that, you're able to share that cost. Having said that, you know, I do want to say that, you know, I've always maintained, and I want to say this, with all Unipet and NP, I was a former chairman of National Petroleum, you would call, when we started the whole civilization upgrade, when we did grant a license to Unipet to be able to start operating. And I do want to maintain that there's no need to say you're increasing dealer margins. Dealer margins, in my view, yes, they will say they're losing in what we call the forecourt. That's fine. Because they have now the what we call the quick shop concept, the convenience store concept, and the convenience store is what is attracting the customer. The forecourt attracts the customers, and you make your profits in the convenience store. It was always a loss leader, and that's the way it works in the international model.
All right, I have enough time for one more phone call. Good morning.
Hi, morning, Devian. Morning, Ms. Bichan. As usual, I just like to hear your explanation. You take chances in the political circle. I think to compare our, let's say, rise and the rise and fall in oil prices internationally, we should benchmark that in either having it drop here in Trinidad for the users. I think the same, but should not have. I think he did the right thing in relation to doing that, because to me, of subsidies given to in our country in other areas. I mean, subsidying T&Tech, subsidying the whole question of water and so on. So to do that, I think it would be a risk to always have the prices sort of drop when oil prices drop. But one thing, do you think that removal of the subsidy totally, what would the price of gas if the subsidies in Trinidad were removed totally?
But well, it depends on what the price would be. I mean, what price are we... To begin with, what you are saying is you want to move to a deregulated market. Huh? If you're saying to remove the subsidy, it means you're no longer going to be controlling the price at the pump. Is that what you're saying? So it means that the price will move in accordance with international prices.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, whatever price comes in, which is what happens in other countries in the world, it is a deregulated market. So again, too, it will depend on how the prices move over the year, if I may say that. So, Davy, I know you're getting close to your news time.
Yes, we have to go.
I just wanted to make three or four comments.
Yes, go ahead quickly. We have at least a minute.
Yeah, I just wanted to say, I think that one of the things that I thought the government, while we talk about Dragon Gas, and I know Coquina Mannequin is one, since they are even renegotiating an OFAC license, they have renegotiated an OFAC license.
Mm-hmm.
I think the same thing should happen for Loran Manatee and Coquina Mannequin. Both Coquina Mannequin was one of the OFAC license that was revoked. Loran Manatee, the field itself had to be deunitized, and it's not making sense by deunitizing the field. That's one issue. The second issue, now, having said that, with all the geopolitical risks, I believe in diversifying your supply basket. So I hope that to see this evening that the government will address the fiscal regime to be able to make the exploration drive, aggressive exploration drive, more competitive in Trinidad and Tobago, to be able to attract investors. And again, too, I think we have to be mindful that when we are talking about our fiscal regime, the taxation regime, it is not one size that will fit all. It's different acreage we're talking about, whether it's deep water acreage, shallow water, mature fields, oil production on land. So I hope that we can see that. The second issue I do want to say, we talk about creating new jobs, being innovative. I hope that we would be able to get to see something more in the renewable energy sector, that could generate those new jobs that we are talking about, generate new spin-off industries, energy efficiency, whether it is even renewable energy, and we will save on our natural gas usage that can be, you know, put towards the petrochemical sector and Atlantic and LNG. Thirdly, environmental recycling is a big thing with me. I find as an industry itself that we are neglecting, and it will save, again, generate a number of new jobs, I see, and lift, you know, our landfills are filled to capacity. And we're talking about solid waste disposal. Look at the recurring flooding problem we have. I think it is time that we start looking at bringing back the beverage container bill to ensure that we have proper recycling of all our metal cans and plastics and glass and all of that sort of thing. Wow. And I think the government should offer incentives where that is concerned.
They have another four budget presentation to install all of these things that you are suggesting.
I think it's important. I mean, the last one I want to say is the technology area. I thought that the big campus is one that could have been used effectively to promote technology. We want to become a technology hub. That's how you have to do it, you know, partner with some of these international, you know, you talk about, you know, like a Silicon Valley, but I'm talking now about the use of technology and building our technology platform. Partner with Microsoft and
make it happen.
All right. Make it happen.
We have to go. Thank you very much, Ms. Carolyn C. Prasad-Bachan. We will talk again in the not-too-distant future. Let's keep our eyes at 1:30 and see what happens. Thank you again.
Thank you, and God bless you and all your listeners.
Thank you
have
very
a good
much.
Morning.
Same to you.
The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.